The Scientists of the Strange, a play for radio by Peter Redgrove. The Scientists of the Strange.
Hunters at breakfast. I must hurry.
Have you noticed how every garden has its own sound? Every tree sounds different under the rain. The lawn has its own note. The gravel path. The oak sounds a deep note. The willow hisses. The drain and the gutter. Each plays its own tune in the rain. Different lengths and different rounds. Different pitches.
Wally Man had never before so terribly altered in so brief a period as had Roderick Usher. It was with difficulty that I could bring myself to admit the identity of the man before me with the companion of my early boyhood. It was...
a nervous action, which would
undoubtedly pass off.
He was dead, except for the natural sensation. He suffered much...
Apologies, everyone. How do you turn this thing off? That's it. Friends, please excuse my interrupting our breakfast reading. I'd like you to meet Mr. Highsticker.
Thank you, Dr. Extremis. Oh, please, don't get up, folks. May I join you? Yes. Some of that scrambled egg. Thank you.
Mr. Highsticker is our angel. Our patron. It is he who has been providing the funds for our research. Which have enabled us to develop our methods of psychical research to an unexampled degree of precision.
One of my tasks will be to gather details of that while I am here.
It has brought us to this beautiful house in Cornwall with its terrible history so that we may wrest from it the great secret.
The best kept secret of all.
Let me introduce Hester. She is a powerful trance medium, but has her sardonic vein. The secret of life after death. Immortality. Well, now, let me introduce the team.
This is Diana Lady, my assistant.
Charmed. Hester, you know, this is Adrian, our scientist. It was his voice you heard on the tape as you came in.
I thought it was Karloff.
I am a passable mimic, Mr. Highsticker.
Why play his voice at mealtime? Is he a kind of mascot?
Me? A mascot, young lady? In the old films, Karloff was the misunderstood scientist who had discovered something so strange and wonderful that the world would not believe. He would freeze his own flesh to demonstrate a cure for cancer. He would bring the hanged criminal back from the dead. But it would all be too strange for his colleagues, and it would all go wrong, and Karloff would die patiently in the incandescent laboratory, or at the hands of his own monstrous creation. He, like ourselves, was a scientist of the strange. We admire him.
This is Sally, our yoga teacher.
Pleased to meet you.
Your report mentioned that the headstand was essential to your method. Are you all able to stand on your heads, Dr. Extremis?
Oh, yes, even me, Mr. Highsticker, in my 82nd year. I feel more alive upside down than I do right side up. Sally is an excellent teacher.
We call it Shirshasan. It's the king of postures. This is my daughter, Thomasina. She never speaks.
She's very beautiful.
She was beautiful when she was born, and she grew up beautiful. But she's a dummy, Mr. Highsticker. She can't speak, and never has. And I don't know what goes on inside a beautiful head. She has fits sometimes, and even then she's silent, though her body seems to scream. She does as she's told. She's a good girl, Mr. Highsticker. She pays her way with the yoga. I can put her into any position I want to demonstrate, like a little warm lacy.
That's all right, Sally. Mr. Highsticker has agreed that she's an essential member of the team.
Now that we all know each other, I'd like my assistant to hear something about your group, Dr. Extremis, before I tell you all why I have chosen this particular house for our experiment. And before I tell you its abominable history.
Pamphlet. At first I thought it was the usual privately printed magical rubbish, but as I read on, it spoke to my mind as well as my curiosity. He spoke of the quest for the Golden Fleece.
Who did?
All the title page tells us of his identity as the initials of his magical name, Frater CGS. But what interested me was that he combined the ideas of yoga and wireless.
Wireless?
Radio. Oh. And yoga. He sees the immortal state as a stepping up of vibration. But let me give you his words, flowery, poetical, and old-fashioned as they are. He begins with certain mysterious aphorisms. They all do. The spiritual ends in its own state is imperceptible, and on a chain of emanations depends for its recognition. The sidereal body is the one wing which extends us across the gulf. And so on.
If those wicked attempt to enter the state of paradise before their purification is complete, they encounter the terrible face.
Thank you, Adrian.
But Dr. Extremis, Bernard, you told me last night you had already found a sensitive spot in the house.
Yes, we have. I'll show it to you in a minute.
But does it always respond?
It has, whatever we've tried it.
Well, you mean you found a really haunted room?
It's quite near. Just behind you, Diana. The rosewood door by the window. The little room paneled in rosewood.
I peeked in there yesterday. It was all right then.
You don't know how to provoke it, Di. please, go on, Bernard.
Just a sec. If it's really haunted, well, doesn't that mean that you've proved your point already?
Just because a room screams, it doesn't mean that the human race is immortal.
I'm afraid it just means there's a screaming room. Well, after the aphorisms, Frater CGS consents to give some diagrams which are about how to breathe. He says, the convolutions of the brain hug the nous, that is the intelligent spirit, in their embrace. Our work is liberating this by the 10 methods of breathing, which are the 10 commandments.
It appears that the headstand releases the top-heavy cerebral convolutions, which with their weight press the nous down.
Frater CGS, I expect the initial stand for some Latin magical motto, now comes on to wireless. Radio. Which he describes in his highly poetic fashion. The aerials are the arterials which conduct the archetypes and make them solid to us by lowering the vibration. For the gods do not reside in solid bodies, but in the planetary intervals which shudder with power. And the lengths are adjusted to the postures and the vibrations of blood and of breath.
Archetypes means gods.
Or spirit. Take your peace.
It's as though the spirits lived in what to us are silences. In the sounds we can't normally hear. In the light we can't normally see.
When we want to see the invisible colors out of space, we build larger aerials, bigger ears, like Jodrell Bank. With your legs waving in the air...
Like the upside-down hanged man of the tarot card.
Your leg arteries are turned away from the earth and become aerials. You are wide open.
If you will latch, you will feel no pain. This is why you play music. It will relax you. That's all the dreading we need to say.
I quite enjoy it.
On almost the first thing he did to amuse his guests was to hang the band upside down and cut their throats. I'm not trying to shock you. This was Rousseau's magical massacre. His intention was, by killing as many people as possible here in ways as unpleasant as he could devise, to create a haunted house. A house between the worlds. He threw a big party. They played party games, and the forfeits were murder. Yet his guests played willingly. They believed the house would be their threshold into immortality and their way back into life as spirits, because they had died, as it were, in fun.
Ghosts like that might catch us in their games and make us pay their forfeits.
Then we'd know it was true, which is what we're here to find out. You've noticed the little waterworks in the garden and the fugu, a Cornish word.
Tell us about the fugu.
It's a stone-lined blind tunnel into an ancient burial mound. No one knows what the old ones use them for. They are reputed to be haunted. If this one wasn't then, it is now. Rousseau decapitated 5 of his oldest friends in the fugu. And in the waterworks, he and his hench persons flayed 3 of the women. We shall visit these special places.
They are bound to be important thresholds.
Well, I think Rousseau, with his magical massacre, was practicing similar arts to yourselves.
Look, it's a gentle art.
We are all declared pacifists.
I see what you mean, Heisticker. Watch the fly there, feeding on the egg. Listen. You hear its vibration, its note, its individual signature? Watch now.
Oh, you'd squash the harmless fly.
No, I have altered its vibration.
What do you think the golden fleece means, Dr. Extremis?
More poetry, it seems. Part of the method is to vibrate a sound. The postures and the vibrations of blood and breath. Or a kind of howl is often used. Sally has made us particularly good at that. CGS remarks, as the operator utters his weird lament, the wind sweeps through the chambers of his head. It is the self-generated breath which shines within and illuminates the dark body. Now, the brain is seen as a fetus floating in its waters, which quickens, and a certain dew oozes as diamonds ooze from the crater of a volcano. Now, hearken, this is that dew of the sages, which captures in itself the shadow of the whole world. He means the whole universe, visible and invisible. It seems that the dew which reflects the whole world is caught like a net of jewels in the gray spider web of the brain, or like dew on a fleece golden with the dawn. CGS says, he has gained this right by cleaning the inside of his own cup, the skull, which beats in tranquility, pounded by the gentle mortar of the blood.
In the inverted posture, the long staff of the aorta thuds on the stage of bone to say the curtain's ready to go up. The veil's ready to sweep aside.
What was that?
It came from the little rosewood room. Look. The door is slowly opening.
It was? A mere nervous affliction, which would undoubtedly pass off. It displayed itself in a host of unnatural sensations.
Adrian?
I think Thomasina has turned the tape recorder on.
She never does anything on her own accord, never.
It is only the first time.
She suffered much from a morbid acuteness of her senses.
Turn it off!
There's nothing wrong with this room. Come and look.
I want to provoke it.
Better not. The rat shows it is already aware of our conversation.
Sally, now you're in here. Do your yoga sound. Everyone all right? Esther?
She's standing quite rigid, with her eyes open.
She's in a trance. I can wake her gently. She may be able to tell us what power resides in this room. Esther, what did you see, dear?
Oh, dear. Oh, it's better. What? Why? I don't know what it is. I thought I was at the dentist.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
Nice little waterworks. Very Ruskin. Very leafy in cast iron. Pillars, cornices. This is where Rosso flayed the three women. His diary says he flushed their empty skins along those big transparent pipes. Look where the bubbles are fluttering upward, like spirits.
It feels peaceful and fresh. With its controls and dials like the brass engine room of a clean little steamer.
Water is pumped from the springs under our feet high up into the lake reservoir above us on the hill. On the night of the massacre, it is said that the blood of the women tinctured the whole reservoir.
Magnificent. What was the explanation?
If you come in here at full moon, at high tide, you can see an occasional swirl of red-colored water in the pipes. It's iron ore from deep underground. Now, there are sensors in the equipment that turn the pumps off when that happens and divert the water to run away down into the river. I love this place. All was cleansing, all was flowing. Even the murders must have been clean murders. The floors hosed down, the skins slipping away like silk. Can any place be haunted where water is flowing?
That little flight of stone steps leading up to the blank wall. What was that for?
Watch.
Oh.
Water's pouring down the steps. Turned white with the foaming water. It makes a tingling in the air, like breaking waves.
It's known as a cascade process. It purifies, aerates the water for drinking.
Can you hear voices? Or not? Just underneath the right sound of the water? Hushed voices speaking fast?
If there are any manifestations here, they will be recorded on tape. Look up at the cornices and you will see the cameras and microphones. I have installed them also at a Fugu. I have a mobile control system. On fast search, I can replay and study the results wherever I wish. Despite the peaceful feelings, this waterworks must be one of the chief thresholds. Do you want to try a full seance here? I'm afraid the child floor is rather hard for your head, Sam.
We can use our jerseys for cushions. We also have cushions. No, another time. But I think it would be nice to sing a hymn here.
A hymn in the presence of murder? I didn't realize that you were a choir as well as a team of ghost hunters.
Think how many hymns are sung daily in the presence of the Jesus murder. Singing to encourage harmonious manifestations is part of our craft. Humming and howling is of the whole of it, you know. Sally sings very beautifully.
Sally sings beautifully. I wonder what Thomasina's voice is like. She stands so still and so beautiful. Always near her mother. A half ghost.
Blind me hands, we climb. The cave, the Fugu, lies under this bank at the end of the lawn. We go through a defile. Look, you can see the lintel at the end of it.
A seaside postcard, two astronauts on the moon. They have discovered a moon giantess. They find they are standing between her immense toes. One, a standard astronaut, pointing straight ahead, exclaims in big black letters, "Gaw!"
Oh, extremely sexy.
I heard that, Adrian. Surely the resemblance of the birthplace between the defile of these great green legs of lawn is no accident. Rosso turned this birthplace into a death place. But sacrifice at such sites is traditional. Who knows what the Neolithic men and women used it for?
It is, you see, an artificial cave passage, sloping very slightly downwards, lined with big flat stones, running into the hill towards the north and finishing in a blank wall. Five of Rosso's friends paid their forfeits here, on this threshold. The bodies neatly stacked just inside, and outside, propped up in the row on the grass, five male heads severed neatly just below the 1920s stiff evening collar, their black bow ties still immaculately in place.
There's a curious echo. I think this is the place. Esther?
Yes, I'm nearly going. You can catch your eyes, the echo here.
We must get into our headstand now. Heisticker, will you and Diana please wait outside? Are the cameras on?
They're never turned off. Did you see that old goat putting his head and hands down like a teenager, levering himself up until his feet were where his head should be? Yet he doesn't.
I guess the headstand is natural to him now. Upside down, he had the glowing face of a teenager. Walking upright must drain the blood from the heart and the head.
They are a choir.
Have you noticed how responsive they are to each other? How sensitive. Their gestures reply to each other's. One only has to move for the gesture to be echoed by another. They move in choir.
I know they all sleep together. Ooh. We've moved the two double beds into the same room. And there's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Try spelling out the initials of their first names.
Thomasina, Esther, Adrian, Sally. T-E-A-S. Teas! Oh, Cornish cream teas! People who tease?
Why did you put Thomasina the silent one first? You forgot the old man.
Bernard! B-T. Oh! Beast!
Like a lion roaring in anger, roaring for its meat.
They're all running out of the cave. They're trying to get Thomasina to the house. She's had her feet.
It's now the night.
It's now the monster man.
The monster night.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the night.
It's Bernard who worries me. He had to come down out of headstand too fast. He'll be all right on the sofa while we watch the recording.
Thomasina sits quite silently, as if nothing at all had happened. You know, you're like a one person, a kind of gentle, strong animal.
Ah, you spelled out the initials.
Four strong legs and a gentle, questing trunk. Well, Bernard doesn't seem so strong. You never parted.
Never.
Supposing one of you died.
We believe he or she would still be with us. He would still be one.
Wouldn't you need another member? On this plane, that is. I wish I belonged to another, or to others as you do. You ever quarrel?
If we did, it would be like a raving beast plunging its jaws into its own side. Rosso's guests were a society like ours. Only they believed that for a beast to eat itself up was the true occult way.
What became of Rosso?
Nobody knows. Bernard, if you've recovered, I want you to tell me what happened down there in the cave before I play back the recording.
Nothing happened.
You were blown out of that cave like spitballs from the jaws of a roaring lion.
It wasn't like that at all. We were playing, dancing with the echo,
Then we were interrupted by Thomasina's fit before we could steer the echo into its own utterance.
What kind of utterance?
Sometimes it speaks. Sometimes it touches us. There may be beautiful perfumes, or it may turn to light.
I see. Diana, put the day's tape at the Fugu onto fast play. Here you are now, beginning your work, coiling up in your headstand.
Oh, it's a very good picture, Mr. Highsticker. It's quite dusky in the cave.
Sensitive tape, special wide-angle lenses. I want to turn the audio off so we can study the pictures. There. Look. Thomasina's out of her headstand. She's starting to buck and gasp on the floor.
Here we all come down like felled trees.
But that's why I brought the seance, Mr. Highsticker, why I went to her. She was crying out. She who's never uttered a sound before.
Don't cry, Sally.
Now she sits there, still and silent. Oh, will she ever speak to me?
Perhaps she's in a trance.
Look how she convulsed it as a picture.
Now you're all rushing out, carrying Thomasina. I want to run the pictures back.
Well, can we listen to my girl calling us?
We will, Sally. But let's look at these pictures carefully first. I want to slow them down and establish exactly what happened.
Oh, my dear. It was no fit. I've never seen yoga demonstrated like that, with such grace, even by my masters. I made her a little, warm, lay figure to earn her keep in my classes. And her muscles must have remembered through all the years of practice.
And the spirit of yoga speaking through her.
Oh, show us again, Mr. Highsticker. Look, my brothers, my sister. Sawang, Garsan. Hu-a-san, Mutsya-san, Pushch-motan-a-san, Bhujan-a-ga-san, Chulabha-san, Bahumua-san, Adha-mutsyendya-san, and Shir-a-san. The candle of flower, fish, forward bend, cobra, locust, bow, spinal twist, and headstand. My best pupil. Beautiful.
Now the audio. First, what do you think happened?
We rode the echo. It became high-pitched.
Like a dentist's drill. Something is drilling towards us from the other side.
Then it rapidly changed pitch. Thomasina was shrieking and the cave was roaring.
Let's play the audio at normal speed.
Records as we all heard it.
Now, let us slow the audio down.
Thomasina's shrieks begin about now.
Thank you.
stability of Thomasina's is troubling to us. I feel that we are now in imbalance. In some way we have closed ourselves, so we could not understand that the silence of one of us was full of power. Our organism, our syzygy, could not detect that she had developed at a higher rate of vibration than the rest of us. I want to suggest that each one of us now opens himself to solitary development. It will not be without its dangers. We do not yet know whether we are to meet in this house the spirits of great adepts making conscious passage between the two worlds, or murderous ghosts, or phantasmal apparitions merely conjured up by the legacy of Prater CGS. Each of us must go alone to one of these portals and open himself to the influence there. We've been together too much. Now we must separate to rejoin. We'll meet here in 24 hours. Now go to your chosen place, the waterworks above ground, the Fogo underground, enter your posture, vibrate your tone, drill head first into the other world, meet head on those who seek to contact you from the other side. Whatever happens will be on tape. Nothing will be lost. Farewell.
It's now the monster man.
The monster man.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the man.
It's a horn and a fly.
It's now the man.
It's now the man.
The allotted time has passed. As the oldest and least interesting person here, I will speak first. I settle my cushion under my head, raise myself into Sheer Shashan in the long dark tunnel of the Fugu. I saw your little camera on the ledge staring at me with its button lens. The daylight from the cave entrance threw my shadow into the darker shadow of the depths of the tunnel. Upside down as I was, I vibrated my low notes towards that blind end of the corridor.
And what happened?
Nothing very much at first. Nothing for quite a long time. Then I realized that I had been watching something without actually realizing that I had been doing so. It was...
Yes.
A light. At first, nothing more. Then I saw that within it was a flickering, a light within a light. I relaxed on the strong pivot pole of my spine and settled down to watch whatever it was I was seeing, making a mental correction for the fact that it was upside down, or rather, I was. Then the light spread itself a little in a complicated manner I couldn't quite understand, and I realized that what I could see was a little stream running over stone steps at the dark end of the Fugu tunnel, at the dark, blind end. After a little, I realized the strange thing about the little stream. I smelt its zest in the air. The tingle of its cascade wafted towards me and invigorated and cheered me. I thought how like the cascade in the waterworks it was, but then I understood how different. The little stream was running uphill, up over the steps, deeper into the invisible recesses of the cave. I followed the water in my mind's eye, and it seemed to draw me onward. I must have fallen asleep then, as I sometimes do in a headstand, because I remember nothing else. I woke a little while later, still balanced in my posture, so I lowered my legs and spent a few minutes relaxing, feeling, as I always do nowadays, that I had been younger and more alive in the inverted posture. And then I came indoors.
The cameras cover every part of the corridor. If your little spiritual staircase was really there, we shall see it. There you are, settling your cushion. There you begin your meditation by humming. Let us speed the tape up. No.
No. Nothing. Blind stone blocks. No staircase.
I didn't think it would show on tape.
That zest in the air. What was the smell of spiritual water like?
I can't describe it. It was like life.
That's a most beautiful experience, Dr. Extremis, but I'm afraid that it gives us no material confirmation of immortality or survival after death.
I have confirmation.
Have you, Esther?
I have confirmation of Ferrata Sugietti's vision at the very least. It's immaterial to me whether it can be viewed on tape or not. No physical recording would add to the conviction I feel after my experience in the waterworks.
Please, go on.
Like Bernard, I took a cushion for my headstand. As I settled into it, I watched the transparent pipe that in ordinary life ran upwards, now towering downward. As I watched, a light blush of pinkish, polluted water passed through the machinery, and the note on the engine changed a little. The hard tires pressed through my cushion with the whole weight of the floor on my head. With my mind's eye, as they say, the third eye, I followed the glassy pipes with their shivering bubbles to the very center of the earth. As I did so, the waterworks seemed to dissolve and topple into its water like a universal solvent, and the whole globe of earth rounded and became transparent, so that I seemed to balance on my head on the skin of an immense single drop of dark water over unimaginable abysses. I seem to see the earth very center of darkness, the place in the heart of water that has no dimensions, but only place. But then, in that place that is no place, I seemed to see a whiteness like a snow of light gathering underground, launching into the dark drop that gathered and rounded and rose towards me. And I saw that it was an apparition of the blessed moon rising from the throbbing heart of water underground. And I blessed the rough, reflective face of the pock-beautiful moon in the earth floating up towards me, for I understood that I saw, as I stood on my head, the great dew or magic mirror of Frater CGS into which the universe for its contemplation precipitates its existence.
That's no...
And then I kissed my hand to the blessed moon and fell off my head.
We've been replaying the video as you talked, and there you are. But as you see, no moon underground. No proof.
Proof enough for me. As above, so below.
Sally, you chose the Fugu. What happened to you there?
Nothing, really.
Nothing. You were there quite a long time, Sally.
Time passes quickly in those places.
You mean underground caves?
No, not really, no. In pubs. Not that I was a great one for pubs or clubs, but in my teens, I used to like going to the club with my boyfriend on a Saturday night. Oh, that was a long time ago. But it all came back. I was back there again.
At the club you used to go to as a young woman?
They were all there. I've forgotten how many. Oh, I never forgot Sam. I was walking out with him at the time. But the old man was at the piano. I never liked him. His broken veins in his nose and his tobacco-stained eyes. And there was Jeff, the MC, in his long coat with spangles and his crisp hair. And Sam was laughing, and he struck the table with his hands, and all the drinks flickered in their glasses, and the lights flickered, and there were soft thuds in the distance, and all the drinks flickered again. Well, Meg was there at the table, my auntie Meg, so Sam and me had to behave. She was ever so fat, and never drunk anything but fizzy lemonade. But she got jolly all the same, as everyone else got jolly on the drink and the songs. Jeff liked us to sing, and he'd hurry the comedian off and get us to sing. And when he wanted our attention, he'd make his hand microphone howl terribly, as if by accident, and we'd all stop dead. Well, they were laughing at me because I'd got a bit tipsy, and I was showing off my yoga, and this was naughty. I took my skirt in my knickers, nobody seemed to mind, and there I was in my headstand, and all the faces staring upside down and laughing at me. And then I felt a bit of wind, so I got down and untucked my skirt and sat down again, as if I'd never been away. And Sam lighted me a cigarette, as they do in the movies, two fags in his mouth, both lighted and one handed to me. And I looked round me as I smoked. And I saw how many of the boys were in uniform. And the girls, too. And under the tables and chairs, those little square boxes you carried your gas mask in. And then I remembered that Sam had died in his soldiers' war. And Big Fat Meg in the Blitz. And I caught Sam's eye, and he smiled at me. So I didn't know whether to scream or smile back, because I knew all these people were dead. And the thuds in the distance were coming closer. The drink slopping over, and the dead lifted their glasses and drank to steady themselves. And I remembered that the club itself had gone in a direct hit. And I wondered if I would go with it when it went again. The thuds coming closer. But then I saw Thomasina sitting quietly at an empty table looking at me. And she got up and she came across to me and she took my hand and squeezed it and bent my head between my knees as though I'd fainted and pushed my head down and down and lifted my legs. And there I was, in my headstand again in the silent fugu. And now you'll see that on the tape.
No. Not here. Not on the machine.
Alas. The best of all would be if one of us came back leading a spirit by the hand.
Thomasina sits all the time by the fire like a silent apparition.
I met Rosso in the waterworks.
And some of his friends.
Did you now, Adrian? That's good. But it will leave traces.
We'll have to see. I was in headstand, all nice and stable, breathing well, when suddenly I found I was weeping. Tears were running upside down out of my eyes into my hair and soaking my cushion. Then I noticed Rosso walking towards me over the tiles, upside down and as solid as you are. I thought it was one of you, so I got down out of my headstand and shook hands. He clapped me on the shoulder and said I was a good fellow, and that he'd like to introduce me to his five friends from the Fugu, who came in their dinner jackets with nice square shoulders and sat in lapels. But naturally, they have no heads anymore, or collars, but just a gristle and knob of bone sticking out of their necks. Somehow, that did not seem vile or mutilated, no more so than the bare metal of an electric cable. And the great splashes of blood on their stiff shirt fronts were not like a butcher's shop at all, but like blooms in a garden of flowers. His five headless friends stood around supportively with arms folded or leaning against pieces of machinery as Rosso talked. And what he said was so gentle and persuasive that the empty space above their necks seemed to smile and be at ease. He said that he and his friends had come to explain his scheme, which was not so far different from our own. These friends of his, he called his forerunners, people so devoted to the investigations that they had agreed to poke their head into the life beyond by decapitation to see what was there. He laughed aloud with his exceedingly white teeth, and said that he wished he had thought of the headstand, because his friends, after they had poked their faces into the other dimension, intended to communicate their observations by writing, and it was extraordinarily difficult to keep a headless man's hands supple. I saw that the five smiling headless men were all holding great folio books under their arms, the places marked with quill feather pens. However, he went on, the shock of the chopper on the back of the neck did have the effect of propelling the soul a little further into the void, on the principle of rocket propulsion. So by that token, his records were correspondingly more profound. He suggested that I should try this out on my friends, but not to tell them beforehand, as they would not understand at first. Then he told me where to find the guillotine blade he used during his final experiment. He laughed heartily again with those white teeth when I told him our name for it, Magical Massacre. And he explained how to fit the blade into slots in the serving hatch there in the breakfast room. He told me that we had among us a ready-made adept who only needed this awakening, who was a virgin to boot and who had never spoken a profane word in her life. And it would put us in awfully good standing if I were to cut Thomasina's head off, and that it would bring lasting contribution, but that I was to tell none of you. And now I have spoiled it all by telling.
Look, Adrian, here on the video, it's the waterworks.
Look, there's no Rosso, no headless henchman there. There you are in your headstand all the time, weeping, talking to yourself.
But it was true. I didn't like it, but it was true. It was a great experiment. We can still do it. Here, come to the knife. The great blade. It is as he told me. The hatchet that slots into the service hatch to make a superb guillotine. Look how smoothly it works. Is that proof enough for you of immortality, my foreknowledge of the blade? Thomasina will do as she's told. She always does. Won't you, Thomasina? Come. Lay your head down here. Like a good girl.
No. No, you shall not love her.
Well, then I will do it on myself.
Close one, Matt. How is he?
Quite calm now. A little weedy. I've given him a sedative. I feel a bit tired myself. Don't forget there's one last account to be told.
Thomasina won't tell.
Are you forgetting we have the video?
I walked her into the funko and moved her into a headstand like a dummy. And she stayed there 5 hours. Nothing happened, as far as I could see. I watched from outside on the grass. God forgive me, I wanted her to have another fit. Then I undid her and walked her back.
How still she is in her headstand. Thank goodness we have fast search. We've not your stamina, Sally, to watch 5 hours. On this equipment, we can run 5 hours in under a minute. Here goes.
Perfectly still in her slender headstand. The shadows of the rough surfaces of the stone walls in the altering daylight from the entrance seem to writhe and wrestle, like a great foam or surf turning and curding, like boiling yeast, like a fermentation.
Yet, the trick of the daylight, with the boughs of trees blowing across to make shadows, or the altering position of the sun over the hours, yet she is utterly still. More stone still than the stones themselves seem. Unwavering. A column. A human axis. A pole star beam. Surely in the most efficient headstand there should be a little wobble over the hours.
Not the tremor of a fit. Just stillness. It is some kind of answer. The stone moving, boiling. The human being utterly still.
A philosophical answer, maybe, my Diana, but not a scientific proof of any kind, I'm afraid.
There's an emergency. Something extreme. What's wrong?
Over here. See, he's in his headstand. What's wrong with that?
He's had a heart attack. I daren't bring him out of his headstand. It would be too great a strain on his heart to walk upright.
Well, how long can he stay like this?
Definitely. He tried to come down out of it, but that started the attack again.
Please, don't worry about me. I'm going soon. I yearn to know the secret of immortality. I long to travel the spirit road, to mount the spiritual waterfall I saw in my vision. To be a wayfarer, a ghost on that highway. But there is one thing. For me, the first step on that journey begins in the fugu. I must pass out of my body there, in headstand. Nowhere else. Not here. Please, not here. Here I may be caught among the desperate, wandering, bloodthirsty ghosts that infest this house. Please, don't let that happen.
How are you going to get him down there?
Study. And carry him to the Flugel as he is.
Upside down?
Upside down and without delay. Out across the lawn, down into the Flugel. Through the French windows. Come and look at this. The full moon is as bright as day.
Where's the lawn? Why is the grass so dark?
The garden is flooded. It's a lake of blood.
But in it I see the moon, the blessed moon from under the hills. The full moon marks a trembling path over the waters, Bernard.
That is not my road. Take me to the cave where I saw my vision.
Hugo will be underwater, like a steep cave in the high tide.
Those flashes of red in the glass pipe should have warned us. The tinted water from the underground springs in the high tide of the moon has been rejected by the pump. There must have been a flash flood of it that overwhelmed the drainage system to the river, and it's turned the whole garden to a lake of reddened water.
I heard the sluices opening and shutting in the night, like a great beast turning over in its bed.
I cannot travel the moon's path over the lake of blood.
We'll find a way, Dr. Extremis.
But I do not want to die on the shores of blood.
He's in a panic. We'll have to do something.
We should be caught among the tangled ghosts of blood.
Dr. Extremis, it's very, very beautiful. The moon has nothing to do with these gangsters. The white road of the moon, it's a thoroughfare. You could travel it.
Oh, let me see it.
Lift them up, everyone. There you are, sir.
Oh, it is so beautiful.
Look, he is kissing his hand to the moon.
Oh, the road is breaking up. The road is shivering into zigzags. Who could travel this tearing path?
It's nothing but a little breeze, sir.
No, it's not.
Look! The lake is sinking.
There's a mound with its defile. And the doorway rising out of the water.
I can die where it was appointed. Underground.
The grass will be stopping.
It'll be a quagmire.
Never mind about that. Open the windows. You can get along the path chair and the level path.
Look, you go on. I want to wheel the TV monitors out to the cave entrance. I can watch everything from there. We may even take Bernard's soul if it slips out of his body. What a front page picture that would make!
Diana, will you take that bottle of candles and the magic and the big torch?
Now, here.
Careful! Keep his head down. Slowly, push him down easily.
Let it go. Give it a candle. It was like the water. Let there be a cave of light from under the water. Oh, adopt him home. Yes, Sally, please put Thomasine into the headstand. Here, a little further along the passage. The rest of you, give him room. I shall see him out this way. We shall travel as far as we can take him in our companionship. Come away, Diana. This is not for you. We can watch together on the monitors. I put them up here, just outside.
I wish I could have long.
The candlelight glitters and flashes in the wet stone. A cave of crystal. Candle flames multiply and flickering in every facet of stone. And every one of the myriad water drops like a living jewel.
How clear that is when your head is firmly on the ground. Not up in the clouds. Like the animals, we breathe the ground scent. Hush, Bernard. We're all together. I can hear the minute water running everywhere in the grain of the earth. The immense water, infinitely busy, infinitely still. I smell it running, I see it stand, I hear its song, simple and multiple.
Let us answer that song. Our humming, the audible sign of our unity and our separateness. Like the myriad water.
Bernard, the gentle vibration will ease him out of his mortal envelope.
Oh,
They've started yelling. They're all falling off their heads. They're scrambling about in the mud in fits like Thomasina. They pull themselves up and stare at something coming at them from down the corridor. What can it be? The end camera's jammed. I can't see what's coming. They're pulling themselves out of the red mud. Ah, the camera's free. Now I shall see. Nothing. A blind corridor.
Your camera sees nothing.
Tell me what you saw in the Fugu which made you all scream and run.
Quite simple. We saw...
You're all covered in mud, Esther. What did you see? Tell me what you saw.
I can tell. It was...
The ultimate... The secret. Do you know the secret?
It's all been so fast. I don't know.
Yes, it happened so fast.
It was so quick. I'm forgetting even as I think about it.
Look back at the cave.
How brilliantly it sent its light outwards along the defile. And the great shadow hanging in the light like a man hanging upside down.
And poor Bernard. He couldn't run from that.
Perhaps one does not run from that. Yes, he is dead now.
This ghost might be lingering, entangled in your screams.
Give me a hand there.
Well, you're not bringing those monitors into the cave with Bernard still warm in his headstand.
You owe it to your dead friend. Diana's right. Your screams may have tangled him. Unless we can recreate the scene, we've lost everything.
I don't feel it was like that, Highsticker.
Think! You may be able to assist the ghost of your friend even now. I want you all to get back into the cave, into your postures. Now bring the recording equipment in. Remember, none of you said it was terrible. You said it was too fast. I can slow it down.
Never let go, do you?
I have to help her friend. You're all ready? In posture? Good. Now, here's the tape, just where Thomasina screams. Steady, everyone. Now, I will play it back, slowed down.
This is where Sally starts screaming at normal speed.
And Adrian. And Bernard.
Do you hear? There are more than four voices.
Often the singing to their recorded voices.
There. Do you hear? That is dead.
Who is everywhere must be joined.
starting point is water, water and mud.
And the odor of a happy ground in the chattering rain and the ground in the clipper.
Entrances into the other world where the waterworks of the Flugu, because that's where the bodies were found. I went along with that, but now, think, where was the first manifestation?
In the little rosewood room.
And remember how Bernard shied away from it?
He can't leave them now. Not while they're worshipping.
It's okay. The tape's running.
It's only midnight. The little rosewood room.
Don't you see how the grain of the wood is like water flowing, but slowed down until it's solid? All trees are shaped by the water flowing through them.
Singing.
But here we can see and touch the flow. It is in our vibration. Just as a radio receiver slows down the rapid vibrations so we can hear them.
It does feel safer here.
like standing inside the cabinet of an old 1920s radio.
It is no good for humans to enter these high, fast vibrations. It shakes them to pieces. This grain is like those aerial CDs mentioned that tap the great void.
How do we turn the set on? I can't stand on my head.
Just hear the echo beginning. How to turn up the volume? Simple. Touch wood. I scream. Funny here.
Funny? I'm terrified.
No, the German. It's the poet Rilke. First line of his Duino Energies. Who, if I cried, would hear me among the angelic orders? Then English. That was from Goethe's Faust. Very well, then. I will be Faust. Appalling voice! Am I to yield to you? I am Faust in everything your equal!
That's all right, then. I thought you were a madman called Heisinger.
Give me the secret.
Secret? I doubt if I can tell you any secret you would be capable of understanding.
Immortality. The secret of immortality.
Oh, that.
You sound embarrassed.
Well, not exactly. Yes, even though. Last warning.
I compel thee.
Very well. The answer is no.
I don't understand.
No. No. Nix. Nix.
No?
That is. The human race is not immortal.
None of us? Not immortal?
I'm afraid not.
We don't survive.
You've got it.
But... all the ghosts! Those visions!
The eternal spirit! That is eternal play!
That saintly old man Bernard, Thomasina, the mistress of Yoga, and Sol after 20 years of silence! Rosso, the evil magician! Diana, here!
The earth has bones, as the water has.
I don't believe it.
That's the whole trouble. You don't believe. You don't believe anything without what you call evidence. Now it's not so bad. You don't believe anything you don't see. Take it, don't tell it. You forget it if you don't tape it. So you tape it and forget it all the same. And you let and point to what you see and say, it wasn't like that. I don't believe it. Because you've forgotten what reality is. Now it's on further. You won't believe anything you can't blow up. So you blow it up, and it's not there anymore. And that's proof it wasn't there in the first place. So the whole earth wasn't there in the first place. So how could the human beings that should be the sovereigns of it be immortal? You were once, but you blew it.
I believe. Help thou mine unbelief.
Sorry, Diana. Make the most of what you've got. Have you? Remember me?
I don't believe it!
Don't believe! But that's just why we have no souls. We don't believe!
No. Listen, what the wickedness of spirits. A good spirit has got to be so cruel as to tell us we were not immortal. Ergo, how can we believe what it says? It was a demon! If we had known a demon's name, he would not have caught us. His name.
Do you know his name?
Can't you see? It must be the one who trapped us in the beginning. for the precious pamphlet in his topsy-turvy headstand. It must be CGS, the Blessed Frater CGS. And now I know what the initials stand for. His full magical name. Oh. Knowing it, I am free.
CGS? What is it then? Crush grotty sorcerers. Can the general shit?
Diana, the initials stand for sanity. Frater CGS. I have been driven sane. CGS. Cum grano salis. Take it all.
Take it all with a pinch of salt.
The Scientists of the Strange was written by Peter Redgrave. The cast: Heisticker, Conrad Phillips; Diana, Sarah Jane Bickerton; Bernard, Nat Brenner; Adrian, Alan Moore; Esther, Susan Engel; Sally, Amanda Murray; and the dentist, Matthew Adams. The music was composed by Sidney Sager and sung by Carol Hall, soprano; Jean Temperley, mezzo-soprano; Mariel Dickinson, contralto; James Lewington, tenor; and Christopher Keat, bass baritone. The keyboard instruments were played by Leslie Pearson. The program was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.